You're brought to the podium.
Alrighty. I want to call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum at this point at 7 o'clock. And I'm going to call the meeting to order. Please note that there is a sign-in sheet that is going around. If you have not signed in, legislators that are on the committee do not need to sign in on it. They're already signed in by being members of the committee. But anybody that is not a member of the committee or other than the attorneys, I mean, they're fine. But anybody else would like them to sign the sheet, please. Even the legislators, if they don't mind, just so we know, have a record of who is here. All right, and I'll call the roll call. You want to call it off? Well, Kevin Roberts is absent tonight, and of course, and I'm chairing the meeting. My name is David Donaldson. We have Carl Pifigliolo is here, and Hector Rodriguez is here, both those legislators. Richard Parody said he's on his way, I believe, and I'm not sure when he arrives. He will arrive, all right? So we do have a quorum. We have three of the five, so we'll start the meeting.
Call vote.
All right, we are looking. This is a working committee that we're going to look at a particular resolution, Resolution 293, which is also considered Local Law Number 10. The local law prohibiting discrimination on the basis of gender identity at places of public accommodations, resort, or amusement. And so we are going to try to run through this piece by piece. Come up with a resolution that everybody's happy with or not. All depends.
Or close enough.
Anyway, so they do have public comment written on here, but typically in a working one, we don't normally have public comment before any of the meetings. Because it's a working session. But, I mean, if we can do a public comment, if you want, I will give anybody that wishes to speak an opportunity to say something, then we need to get to work. Anyone that cares to speak? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, how are you?
Identify yourself and
speak away.
I'm Callie Kane
from Citizen Action of New York, and I thank you for having a special meeting. It's really important that in Ulster County we're protecting all of our citizens, and not just those who are gender conforming. And I'm here to listen, and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Anyone else care to speak? Yes.
My name is Cassandra Burke. I'm a citizen of Ulster County. Just wrote something short I'd like to read. We live today in a quickly changing world. Much of what was once held as a standard for normative behavior has become outdated as we face new challenges and new definitions of what it means to be an American in the 21st century. As so often has been the case in bygone eras, when the pendulum of social change swings high to allow for progress and change, the backswing of fear of the unknown and distaste for change also swings with the tide. It is for this reason that we implement laws to protect those who are forerunners of social change. It was only a few short decades ago that laws protecting the rights of gay Americans became necessary to ensure their safety, dignity, and access to equal protection under the law. As American consciousness becomes more familiar with the presence and struggles of transgender citizens, it is time once again for those who are charged with protecting the common good to act to protect our most vulnerable members of society. It is time now for legislators here and across the country to ask themselves, what is the dignity of a human being worth? Dignity is defined as the state or quality of being worthy of respect. Transgender citizens are entitled, as all Americans are, to be treated as full citizens who are worthy of respect, because they are inherently worthy of such due to their status as human beings. Right now, in a time of great change in my people, your considerate and thoughtful action is needed to ensure that the human dignity of transgender people in Ulster County is protected. That is all I ask to be able to those charged with the task of serving all who live here. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else care to speak?
I might want to re-raise the questions I did on June 20th. It's only like 8 lines.
Say it.
Yeah. The nagging concerns are in the 10 of 50 states or cities, from New York City to Charlotte, North Carolina to Nebraska to California, they have not allowed for separate facilities. is that going to be the case in Ulster County, particularly with locker rooms and showers? And in those same municipalities, no written order by a medical professional needs to be presented by the transgender. No CNA, no LPN, no RN, no nurse practitioner, no doctor. It's solely on the whim of the person who says they're transgender, confused, whatever they choose to use. Because, you know, terms change throughout years. I hope that's the answer. We can't trust our public officials anymore to say we got it covered. I remember a time when we didn't have to put everything in writing, but that's gone. Like 35 cent a gallon gasoline. Yes, I remember that.
May I just ask for your name?
Robert.
Robert what?
But I'm nobody special. I'm just a voter.
We need it for the records for people that speak. It's all.
Well, I signed in, so it's
okay.
There.
Okay, fine.
Ward 2, the capital of Ulster County.
Okay, that good? You're done?
That's it. Those two questions. I would have much anxiety if they weren't addressed.
All right.
Yes or no.
Okay. All right, now, how does the committee wish to start this process? We have a number of ways we can do this. We can run through it piece by piece. My suggestion is take a look at it. We read through the beginning and take a look at it and decide if you want to see something changing or what you wish to do with any particular part of this resolution, starting with the Section 1 legislative intent and finding. By the way, I did supply a copy of the New York City law. I felt that we should have another one to actually look at for a, that's been passed and signed by the mayor and moved on. So I figured that would be something that we could use since you want to refer to something and say, how do they do it? I mean, Jennifer, yours came from where did you get yours? Or where did you use yours?
We modeled it after New York City's law.
Okay, so you modeled it after New York City's law. Okay, good. I wasn't sure about that. I didn't know that, so I grabbed one that was done. So.
No, thank you.
I probably should have taken one from Seattle or something.
Well, no, I think it makes sense.
I'd say that.
Or any one of the other 200 local.
All right, anybody. Okay, starting with the legislative intent and findings, does anybody have on the committee or any legislator? I'll open that up to the legislators because they're the ones that are going to be voting on this. So I'd like to have anybody that wishes to have any comment on the opening. Do you want anything changed? Do you feel something, or is that good? No comment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
All right, I know there was an item brought up by Legislator Farrity.
I did raise my hand, but
okay, go ahead.
After Jay interrupted you.
And
the legislative intent and findings, maybe it would be a good idea to state that New York State already has a law and that pursuant with the state of New York, you know, the county legislature is intent on creating this local law.
Which New York State law are you referring to, Carl?
I'm referring to the local law of discrimination on the basis of gender identity, section 46613 of the New York State Code of Rules and Regulations.
It hasn't been passed.
Do you have copies of it? It's passed?
We can duplicate them. It's a regulation that was.
It's not a law.
It's
a regulation.
All right.
It's an executive
regulation.
Order.
It's not an executive order. It's a statewide regulation. It has the force of law.
Okay.
Is it ratified by the U.S.?
Well, it's not a statute, so Chris is correct. It's not a, if you want to use the term law, it's a regulation. However, it has the force of law in the sense that if you, as a transgender person, experience discrimination in Ulster County or anywhere in the state of New York, as of today, or as of January, but certainly as of today, you have the right to make a complaint with the State Division of Human Rights, have it heard, have it investigated, have it adjudicated, and if a penalty is assessed or not, have a right of appeal up to the civil courts as provided for.
So in that should we make a slight change in this to reflect that?
I'd like to, are we going to go through this like we're going to make a proposed amendment and actually go through and vote on it? Is that what we're doing?
I would like to do that, and then Monday, what is happening is when we meet on Monday, the regular meeting would then vote on the amended resolution. You know, the resolution as amended, that makes the most sense, I believe. And I would like to get it done, you know, sooner rather than later, but there's no rush in any. In other words, I prefer to get the thing done right in the way that we ever, you know, that we feel it should be done, and move on.
Well, all right. So, like, pursuant to executive order number section blah blah blah, which we'll get the wording. The State of New York and the Ulster County Legislature is intent on creating a local law to prohibit discrimination against transgenders.
All right, the other members of the committee or member of the legislators?
I have a question related to this. In regards to this, as council identifies a regulation, can you state to us what steps would be needed to repeal that regulation or for that regulation to cease to exist?
Well, it's stronger than an executive order, so it'll survive Governor Cuomo. It's a regulation that's on the books with the same rulemaking authority that brought it into place, which would be required to take it out of place.
So a new governor could, at the same ability that Governor Cuomo had to establish this regulation, also repeal this regulation?
It's stronger than an executive order, so it's not just he did issue an executive order, I think, early on, but that only applied to state agencies or state employees. So this is a formal regulation that was promulgated pursuant to probably SAPA or whatever the state procedural act is.
So what steps?
It's open to public comment and through a formal rulemaking process, and it appears in the New York Code Rules and Regulations, so you need an equivalent act to undo it.
So it's stronger than an executive order, but it's not stronger than a law?
I think that's probably fair to say. I don't know, Chris, if you have an opinion on that.
I would agree with that. It's not a law.
Yeah, so a law would be stronger.
Correct.
Yeah, well, you know, under legislative equivalency, if you have a law, it takes a law to undo it. Mm-hmm. If you have a regulation, you give another regulation to undo it. An executive order would be a stroke of a pen. So it's stronger.
But how does the regulation actually become the regulation?
Yes.
Right. It has to go through a rulemaking process, like whether it's through, you know, an insurance regulation that would go through the Department of Insurance, or in this case, it would be the State Division of Human Rights. It goes through a formal rulemaking process. Published public comment period is solicited, sometimes multiple public comment periods, and then it's ultimately adopted. And it appears as a published regulation in the New York Code and Rules as of January of this year. I did only bring one copy of it, but if you're interested, I can make copies.
Okay. I mean,
Thank you.
Through the chair to Councilor Ragucci, because you were involved with the drafting of this local law, by comparison to a regulation, and mind you, I realize our local law probably would not be preempting any state regulation, but really, what's the value in doing a local law versus just a regulation by the State of New York?
Well, in my view, our local law goes much further than the state regulation does. It's much more stringent and provides much more specificity with regard to what's regulated and what's not regulated. Mm-hmm. Like the New York City law, it pretty much identifies very specific instances where this type of discrimination can take place. But the New York State regulation basically is a broad brush on the problem, mm-hmm. and it actually leaves room, I think, for more specificity at the local level, which is what we're doing.
Tracy's had her hand up for quite some time. She's going to ask you a question.
But she's not in the committee. Don't you think you
I understand that, but as I said from the very beginning, I'm going to treat the members of the legislature just like they're on the committee because I really feel that this is an important aspect and I'd like to have it done right. But she's going to ask you a question.
Yeah,
anyway,
so. What you're proposing is referring to this regulation in the intent and findings. And what I'm just confused why you want to refer to the regulation.
Well, because as of before tonight, not many people knew that there was a regulation in New York State that offered this kind of protection. Why does the Ulster County legislature alone have to stand with this local law? Why can't we? It's only the legislative intent and findings. Okay? Why don't we let the public know? Pursuant to executive order or rule of regulation, New York State section, boom, 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 and the county legislature's intent on creating a local law. I mean, it's not changing the local law. If anything, it's adding validity to it.
Excuse me, sir.
I'm sorry.
A, I didn't recognize you. B, you're not one of the legislators.
But it's a talking point also that I think the committee and the legislature should know that there were efforts on the state level.
Right. I kind of agree with him. I don't think there's any harm in adding this in some way or form. Do you see that any harm in that, Chris?
No, not at all.
I think it would actually lend to it. Right, it helps support the local law. I think there's no problem in that.
Yeah, I think that as long as it's worded in a way that suggests that as well.
Yeah, I wanted. In other words, we don't want to word it to say that we're defaulting to that. Mm-hmm. We want to word it in that. Mm-hmm. In other words, it just sort of helps, you know, gives us more reason to do this. Or you might want to put it that way. And you take care of that? And is everybody more or less in agreement with that mindset?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's good. We'll move on.
I can certainly add a paragraph.
Well, I was going to say, this will be to get the language. I was going to say.
Well, they'll get the language now. Right. We Chris said we could do that just to make it so mm-hmm. words like that. And you can get it to us. We'll get it ahead of time before
right, so Chris,
the Monday meeting.
Chris will draft that.
Yes. All right. Definition.
One thing I might suggest is, since the initial draft looks like it was worded on or based on the New York City regulation, this came into play, the state regulation, just in January, so it's a new regulation that wasn't in place when New York City or other localities were maybe fashioning laws like this. New York City and the state certainly have comprehensive human rights laws. I don't believe Ulster County has any such thing in their charter or the code, apart from the Human Rights Commission. So this is a very specific issue. Targets only either gender identity, transgender status, or it doesn't mention gender dysphoria, which the state reg does. But what my thought was is if you're going to go in this direction, you may want to consider patterning it after the state regulation, not the New York City regulation. It's decidedly less verbose, I would note as well. I don't necessarily know that we're going further than the state is, and the state has a comprehensive regulation in place and addresses categories that the local law doesn't address. So just from a big picture perspective, my thought to stay in compliance, if it's the policy issue as to whether you support this or not, but to stay in compliance with state law and not get into a preemption scenario, my thought would be you should attempt to model it after the state regulation, not the city code.
All right, well, what changes would take place because of that?
I'd just like to respond to a couple of points on legislative intent. First of all, as we concede that it's appropriate to refer to the state regulation, and which I'm very much aware of because I work with the Parks Department and they've had to implement it in all facilities. The state has been ushering GENDA, the Gender Anti-Discrimination Act, through the state assembly for years now. You can probably tell us how long. I think at least 7 years. And it's one of the guiding ideas behind this is that this has been something that has been perceived as needed by the populace for quite some time now and their representatives. So I'd just like to mention that if we're going to mention the state regulation, we could also mention the call for a state law that's been working its way through, and that we're just leading on that. And the other reason I would mention in the legislative intent that perhaps hasn't come up until tonight is that there have been reported incidents here in Ulster County, and that is indeed part of the legislative intent of doing this in particular. We haven't heard about numerous violations of human rights in the last year, but we have heard about numerous alleged violations of the transgender rights.
Do people want that added in here?
I'm just saying that was part of the intent, whether it's written or not. So if that answers any question as to the intent.
Legislator Schwartzberg makes a good point that the reason why New York State has failed to actually make it the law of the state, it's been introduced in both houses, but both houses have failed to make it law. So, I mean, if we are going to bring in the state perspective, I think that is important. It's the failure of New York State, of both houses, to pass this law and have it be signed. Because it is introduced to both houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that we as a locality have the right to preempt where we feel we need to lead.
Yes. Anybody else? Anything else? Do you want that added in the intent?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on whether it makes the law stronger or I think that I would leave that to my colleagues. I don't necessarily think it has to be there.
I'm
just answering
the question. I don't know if
it does,
but,
Well, I mean, it can, insofar as at least we're highlighting that, yes, you know, while the state's done a regulation via its codes, that it has yet to actually pass a law, right? So, I mean, we can basically kind of add that in with regards to part of the reason why we're doing this is, you know, the failure at this point of the state to actually pass a law, an all-encompassing law for the entire state. So, if we say something very simple, not pejorative or anything like that, but simply stating the fact.
Right, the intent is the state has not passed the law.
Yep.
Although they have regulations, we can actually, maybe we can figure them all in together there. Although they have regulations and we can quote the regulations that do have some protections, but they have yet to pass, in other words, an actual state law. So maybe we need, maybe that would be the added intent and we have it all put together. Right? Yep. Everybody sort of okay with that?
I mean, adding the regulations in the of the state.
We're going to add that there are regulations, but basically the state has not formalized a law for this type of protection. So something of that. In other words, so we're showing that there are the laws, the regulations, but there is not a formal law that has been passed by the state legislature.
So it's basically the same amendment that I proposed.
Sort of, but just adding the idea that they haven't passed the law. Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to also repeat and confirm what Nick said a moment ago, because I think it's worth just taking in again that we at Ulster County do not have a distinct human rights law. Is that correct? We have a human rights commission,
correct.
And we're operating under existing state and I assume subsequent federal law. And even looking at what you circulated, Dave, New York City's legal enforcement guidance, they speak to, it says here, such as similarly worded provisions of federal and state civil rights laws are a floor below which the city's human rights laws cannot fall, rather than a ceiling above which the city's laws cannot rise. So it strikes me as kind of profound that here we are passing potentially or discussing the first human rights law distinctly for the county. And I appreciate that we're taking into account state legislation, but I mean, this is probably going to be a first step to looking at other human rights laws for the county that exist beyond. Where can we do better than the state does beyond? So thank you for bringing that up.
Right, because I know we don't. And they haven't had one because I believe it was 20 years ago it was an attempt to put one in.
Exactly.
And it did not get through the legislature.
This bill begins now.
I put it in. Oh, I know. And since then, we haven't really brought it up.
I'd like to see that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so anybody else wish to have anything added to this, or is everybody okay? We're going to refer to the state regulations and the idea that there is not a state law. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's part of the reason why we're pushing it. All right, definition. Definitions.
I'd like to mention that in conversations with constituents and representative groups, it was raised that the words sex and gender are sometimes used interchangeably, and that we need to at least review where there are inconsistencies. And so I'm taking into account their remarks, and we will do that. I just wanted to make sure that you knew that I've been collecting remarks from people in the community, and rather than proposing them one at a time, I'm proposing them here as we discuss them.
Okay, so where is there, have you looked at any of those?
So I haven't, this is something I think I'd have to review with council and just make
anybody,
sure.
Everybody else here, what Slater Schwartzberg is in?
I think that they were, in a sense, fashioned after other laws, but it is raised as an inconsistency. I don't know whether it is an inconsistency. I think we need to look carefully at the definitions of sex and gender and make sure that they're in fact used accurately throughout.
Did you want to talk about sex now? Or
no. Are you saying that that's a redundancy, sex and gender?
No. It's not about redundancy. They're in fact not considered the same. So,
All right, since we're in the definition section, and I guess, you know, just because I want to kind of get to your point, Mr. Mm-hmm. Berkey, because that seems like should be in B, but
okay.
Just want to make sure, so, you know, as we go through, you know, as using this local law, the following terms will be used. Shall have the meanings include indicated. The term person includes one or more individuals, partnerships, or associations, corporations, legal representatives, right? And so it seems to be in B, mm-hmm. where we've got two instances of the word sex. And gender shall include actual or perceived sex, and shall also include a person's gender identity, self-image, appearance, behavior, or expression, whether or not that gender identity, self-image, appearance, behavior, or expression is different from that traditionally associated with the legal sex assigned to that person at birth. So,
gender is perceived sex.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, but in this instance,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I probably rely on counsel, but that seems accurate, no?
Yes, I'm just saying that there were comments that as we look through, there may be a word or two out of place where it's not, gender is not about perceived sex, and therefore mm-hmm. you may see recommended language change from us. That's all I'm saying.
All right, as long as it's not substantive,
no.
This is going to change.
I just
anything.
Wanted to bring
I don't
that up.
Have a problem. I understand yeah. what you're talking about. And this way, if we see it as we go along, we'll fix
that's
it.
Right.
I don't even think I see it
if
anymore.
We don't, I mean, I haven't seen anything, but if we yeah. do, if you do.
I think it's just in D.
Or we don't, you do, it's fine. We're not changing
okay.
intent.
Mm-hmm. I think it might be yes. the legislative intent. But
go ahead.
Oh, is that what, okay.
No?
Oh, I didn't want to speak over. Again, I'll refer back to the state law if we're talking about definitions. So the executive law 292.9 does have a definition of public accommodation, and it's this is probably about, I think, two-thirds of the way of a mirror of that, but there are some additional provisions in the state definition that don't appear here. So if you echo back to the concept of floor you can't go below.
What are they?
I don't have the actual statute here with me, but I can tell you that it is not a verbatim nor does it have to be necessarily. It can maybe add to the definition, as you said. You know, you can expand it, but you can't, I think, take away from it or go below it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an issue that should be taken note of.
All right, so how do we address that at this point?
Well, go ahead.
Well, I had a question about that, too, which I brought up in caucus. I personally would rather see it be a much more broad definition, simplified, mm-hmm. not listing things, because I'm not, yep. I'm not an attorney. As I read a list, and it's kind of to your point, Nick, as I read a list, I think because this is laid out so specifically with places that I don't even know if we have in the county, I start to think, well, what if I'm operating a place mm-hmm. that isn't in that list? I know it says in every other place, but at least I can make an argument, well, I wasn't in a specific list. So why don't we just say every public place? And especially if the state, which I know has a inclusive list, and it's the floor we can't go below, can't we just be super broad and say all, the last sentence, public, any public area of any place, whatever the legal language you want to make up, just as broad as you could possibly write it, without listing a whole malt beverage dispensary. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny, but skating rinks, there's a lot that's not mm-hmm. here, and I didn't read the long list.
That's true.
Yeah. You want to explain why we used it?
Uh-huh. Well, could I make a suggestion? I think Nick's point is a good one. I'm sorry, Council's point is a good one. Specifically, we could say, including but not limited to places of public accommodation as set forth in New York State. Well, we can cite the actual law there. Right. I think it was 292, right, Nick?
Yeah, 292.9. So
292.9, but also include the language, including but not limited to. So then it's, and then we could add on to that any and all places of public conveyance.
Let me ask you a question while we're on this. The last on C, the very at the end of C, where it tells that such terms shall not include kindergarten, primary, secondary schools, high school, academies, colleges, universities, extension courses, so on and so forth.
Has to do with the title too.
Mm-hmm. What does that have to do with?
Title two, the federal law. Civil rights law and Board of Education, Department of Education, prohibiting discrimination in those places.
Well, what you're saying is...
So we're saying is that we don't govern that. Federal law does.
Federal law would have to spell out those federal bans.
Right.
There's some other language out there. We don't have the authority to regulate those areas because they're regulated already by federal statute.
But education is a charge of the state.
Right, but there are federal laws that regulate what you can and cannot do in different schools, for example.
Right.
I mean, and think on it, at the federal level.
The state's rights issue deals with, in other words, it's the states that are to... edumacate, yes. As Popeye would say.
We could strike it. I mean,
well, I don't know if you really want to go and do that.
Okay.
But I mean, if you're comfortable with striking that and you feel that is not something you want to go into, that's fine. But my take on it is it is a state regulated also, and they're actually the federal government has regulations, but the state can ignore some of them. In fact, many states have ignored them and done their own thing. That's why they graduate from high school and seem more like a sixth grade education. But anyway, that's another issue. All right, well, I'm just curious because I see that in here and I just figured I'd ask the question. Yes.
By striking that out, then that would include them.
That's right.
That's correct.
That definition is in the state law.
What's that?
That definition is in the state law.
What is?
A public accommodation where you're accepting those locations from that definition. That's present in the state law.
The exception is present.
So the same definition is present.
As it's written currently, the exception of the additional language I referred to, what is in there is consistent. It's consistent with the state. There's additional language not in there. That is in the state statute, is the point I raised earlier.
All right, I just got to bring it up. I saw it and I was kind of curious. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to go down that road then. No problem. Alrighty, so then anything else on definitions?
Yes. Yeah, I just want to understand. We're going to make it a broader definition instead of listing all
we are. We're going to talk about, they're going to again list...
any public place?
They're going to list the state law, 2929, was it?
292.
They're going to list those and then... Yes, so it includes them and everything else. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Including but not limited to.
Yeah. It's places of public accommodation, right?
Yep, I'm fine with it. Go ahead.
Can I just ask a legal question, something that I hadn't seen before today since now I'm cross-referencing the state? So you have the definition of person, which includes individuals, partnerships, associations, corporations, and legal representatives. And then the beginning of the prohibition says all persons within the jurisdiction of the county shall be entitled to and equal accommodation. I'm just being, you know, maybe this is obvious, but I just want to confirm. Does that mean that, I know what the intent is, but because we're defining a person as including a partnership, association, a corporation, or a legal representative, does that mean, like, all corporations are, it applies across the board?
Where are the wordings on that one so I can read it?
I just want to confirm, you know, just after the other federal understanding of person as a corporation.
The facility itself.
Yeah, that's just.
We didn't move on to that.
Place 2C.
We're still right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Why do we have it that way? Why is it. You know, where the intent of the law...
Well, when I look at the model legislation, which I hadn't seen before just now, when Nick pointed out, it says in 2, it says it shall be an unlawful discriminatory practice for any person being the owner, leasee, and then it extrapolates. But because this begins with the, you know, conveying the right to persons, but the definition of persons has to do with corporations, I just want to make sure that that's not a... going to be an issue. I defer to the legal minds. I'm just raising the question.
Nick?
I think Chris is the drafter. I'm going to defer to you on that. I'm not sure.
Well, I think it's a good question, Legislator Bartels. I would think that the prohibition of being applicable to all persons, whether it's a partnership or it's an individual, I think it's still applicable. So I don't know if there would be any legal issue with it. I mean, I certainly understand where perhaps you could clarify that when we refer to persons in Section 3, it's referencing individuals.
Well, in other words, you're saying that those entities might not have transgender status, being only a natural person.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
so all individual
that's
persons.
Certainly a valid
observation. Yeah, no, it's a good
question. I'm not sure how you wordsmith around that in the current.
And I didn't see it before, so I apologize.
Yeah.
And
to follow up on that, though, I mean, but isn't it, I mean, the definition that's used in 2A that then without kind of plugging into Section 3, right, to be so see how it's applicable. I mean, that's a pretty standard definition, isn't it?
Yes.
Of person.
It is, but my concern, no. I think the concern that Tracy has is that in this particular resolution dealing with, you know, and that was one of the things that John Parry brought up, that, you know, he had a problem when, you know, he brought up the idea when that thing happened in Kingston where the guy, they brought the, they were like KKK sympathizer people, and then they wanted to drink and dine at his place, and he refused, said that he wouldn't allow him in the place.
But then we get into where Chris already, you know, brought up, you know, clearly at that point, we're talking about, by the time you get to Section 3, you know, we're talking about natural person. I mean, at that point, we're not getting into that particular group, right? You know, being able to kind of get a special privilege, so to speak, even though, you know, basically at a private establishment. I mean, at that point, it's not about the group. At that point, it's the natural person, right?
Correct. So we could
with regards to Section 3.
It may be that this just piqued my interest because there's only unlike the state law, there's only three definitions, you know, and then mm-hmm. we go right into the prohibition, which begins with the first definition, you know, so as, again, I just want to make sure I support this.
Should we clarify?
Sure.
Tracy, should we clarify, though, within 2A about natural persons?
Yeah, I mean,
I think Chris can do. No, because A is not about that. It's important that A exists.
No, I agree.
In terms of...
But,
not those we're conferring protection to, but those that we are concerned about not giving the protection. That's why, I mean, that's
yeah, no,
why that language is there, because we want to make sure that if an organization can't say, well, I'm not a person, I'm a company, or I'm an LLC, and I'm saying you can't come in, even though I have a public restroom.
I got that, but I'm basically trying to find the area where we end up providing the clarification. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I think it is just wordsmithing, okay. Some kind of figuring in Section 3 to make sure that the first sentence somehow... I don't know.
All natural born persons.
Chris will be able to handle.
Good, Chris.
If I could just perhaps propose a minor change, instead of all persons, just reference all individuals within the jurisdiction of the county. And individuals is noted.
There you go.
As one of the groups in sub A under Section 2.
That's completely self-defined.
I thought the term.
Well, that would also prevent. That group to turn around and say they want to drink and dine at his place after, you know,
correct.
You know, he can refuse them.
Because it preserves the generality of the definition of person as used in somebody, but then specifies individuals who will receive the protection, not okay. the person as the. You know, in the corporate sense. So to speak.
Right, yes.
I'm sorry. I'm having a problem understanding because in Section 2A, the term person includes everything that we're talking about. Now you're saying it's in Section 3, the term is going to be individual and not person?
When we're just the defined, first, just the first time it says person. You're going to keep using person.
All persons. Instead of all persons, all individuals?
Right. Yeah, but then it'll say no person being right. the owner, which that would include corporations
right.
and businesses and all the things in the definition of person.
Yeah, but the person being discriminated against would be
individual.
Right. Yeah. We're dealing with individual rights.
Right.
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 We're not dealing with
not corporate
rights.
Right.
Corporate rights. And we don't, and that by putting the individual name in there, you in other words, even though it probably would have been read the other way that it is an individual, but
I think it
makes more
point.
Sense to do it that way. That way we're assuring that that's what we're talking about.
If I may, I just also want to address what Legislator Parity raised in the other session, because he's not here and it was mentioned, which is whether or not he would have the right to refuse to serve a group that might offend him in some way. And the answer to that is, I believe, since we've discussed this, right, is if so long as it's not a protected class, that's to some extent still his right to do. If it's a protected class, for example, skinheads might not be a protected class, but transgender individuals, if we pass this law, would be a protected class. So there's a difference for him to say that, for us to say that a business would somehow be not within its rights to refuse business is not accurate. Unless we're talking about race and any other protected class. Is that clear?
Yeah, and I would assume to your point that a follow-on to that is that even a protected class could be refused service, but not based on their status of protection, but based on their
class.
Behavior.
Right.
If a group of women
That's
who
right.
are you're protected based on gender go in and start screaming on top of their lungs and breaking glasses and
right.
acting rudely, you might be asked to leave, not because you're women, but because you're behaving rudely in a way that
right.
management can't. So it's about...
It's about the offense,
it's about the right.
person.
Right. And the status of the class. Yeah.
I just wanted to raise it because it
was
mentioned as a concern that businesses might have, and we've discussed that.
Okay.
Right. I mean, it was skinheads. Those skinheads, I think it was from the... You remember
from
when
high
they...
School.
Do you remember
rally.
That high school thing?
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed up around the area, and they came in and wanted to...
They stayed up at the camp.
They actually wanted to have a little party there. He said that he wouldn't let them in.
Right. So that would not, he would not be, he would be within his rights to reject them.
No.
Because they're not a protected class as such.
Okay.
So I think we can move on. I just wanted to raise that.
Okay.
Anything else?
Just on the, if I may, on the definition section of place of public accommodation, I don't know if there was any kind of consensus on whether this was going to be revisited, the definition of what language was going to be used. Is that kind of a moving target? Or you settle on what you have here?
You mean the under the C, you mean?
2C, right.
No, I think we agreed.
Yes.
My understanding is, and I think to your initial, the initial issue that you raised, is that we'll rely, and I think properly so, upon the state definition as it's set forth in 292 sub 9, with the additional language that said, you know, including but not limited to public accommodation as defined by New York State.
Okay, so you're incorporating the state statute by reference.
Correct, instead of resuscitating it.
That, okay. I understand.
And then perhaps, you know, but just by the nature of including but not limiting it,
yes,
to that definition, it makes it a broader definition.
Right, that's what we were talking about before.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
But do, I mean, we'll get that together. I mean, today is Monday, right?
Today's Monday.
So
yes,
it will be the following Monday. So you'll know, whenever you get it done, whenever you have the final language, that, you know, the little changes there.
And I can
have, we'll have it all emailed out to us when you take a look at that, and then the following Monday where you will look at them again,
no,
and make sure everyone's happy with them. If not, we'll just go to the next meeting. That's all. I mean, we'll introduce. But I'm confident we can probably get that taken care of. Yes.
We're on prohibition still?
We're just moving on to prohibition, yes. Go ahead. You want to talk about it?
I'll let someone else
go. Go ahead, Carl.
No, I just want to clarify, because I asked the question about 10 minutes ago about Section 2C. We're going to generalize those definitions and terms, and we said yes. Now we're saying no. The only thing we're going to generalize is a place of public accommodation.
No, we're using the state statute. We're going to use those and then put in a general statement saying more or less that, you know, not limited to. So we're actually using the state accommodations now, I mean, the state definition and, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's basically what we come up with.
This is section of the state human rights law.
Is the state actually included more?
In addition. In addition to our definitions?
No, the exhaustive list. I'm sorry, I don't mean to.
No, sorry. No.
The exhaustive list that's set forth under Section 2
yeah,
C is going to be replaced.
Oh, replaced by the state.
By reference and the
probably
reference
on the state.
Okay.
Yeah. By
reference
to the state.
Yes, no, I just didn't.
Yeah.
Wasn't,
it's a good change.
So we're, you know, we're using what's already there in the state. All right, prohibition, back to prohibition.
Again, this is the first time I'm seeing this. You circulated the New York City law. I would happily and totally support this as is, but I just wanted to ask if there was the will to include employment and housing in terms of discrimination based on employment and housing in this legislation as well.
It is not in ours?
No. I think federal and state law have prohibitions against discrimination.
Oh, that's true.
Well,
that's,
I mean, certainly this kind of circles back to the initial issue you raised, which is that you have a statewide, comprehensive statewide regulation in place. It does cover housing, and it does cover what were the other.
Well, I'm looking at the city's one.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at employment and housing, which seemed like,
right,
if there was the will of the legislature to include them to be even more. I mean, I am of the mind that. I would support including more, including discrimination on the basis of employment, discrimination in the realm of housing. I will happily support it as is. I'm just saying if there's the will to put it there, I think why not? And I didn't see it before looking at the New York City regulation you circulated.
Yeah. Anybody else have any comment on that? I mean, I tend to agree with you on that. I mean, if they are there, and I realize that there are federal regulations and state regulations dealing with that, but if we're putting something in our local law,
I think we should really be mindful, like I said earlier, to my fellow legislators and certainly to the sponsor. I mean, I think, and Nick's the one who pointed it out. I mean, we're making county history here by creating the first human rights law in the county. So it seems to me that we should be as inclusive as we can get the support for in terms of this. And I would have brought it up. I would have called you personally. It's just this is the first time I've seen New York City law just set down. So I will, like I said again, I'll happily support it as is. I'm so proud to support it, but I would like to, if we could get the support for adding employment and housing, why not?
I agree with Legislator Bartels because going back to the previous section, with intent, we were saying, we were highlighting New York State's failure to mm-hmm. pass gender.
Right.
Gender, as introduced in New York State, does include fair housing and employment.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very helpful.
Yep.
Yeah, that link makes it very clear. Thank you for pointing it out.
So do we have an agreement on... Go ahead, Nick.
Just to clarify, and I understand the reference to that I made to that we don't have a comprehensive law in place in Ulster County was really more directed, and I think we're going to get there shortly, at the enforcement section. There's a lot of machinery in place at the state level and the federal level today. Any of these areas that we're referring to, employment, housing, education, public accommodation, if a transgender person experiences that kind of discrimination statewide, they have a remedy. It's already in place uniformly through these regulations. So my point in bringing that up was to say that we're sort of taking this, I guess, Trace, Legislator Bartels is characterizing it as a first step toward creating a broader human rights law. That might be what happens. My point in bringing it up from a legal perspective is there's probably a lot of other things that need to be put in place locally because we just don't have it here right now. So you're putting out this law, but you don't have the enforcement mechanism in place. And we're going to get to that issue, I think, shortly. But that's why we're one of the reasons I bring that up.
Well, what is the pleasure of the legislators on this?
I'm fine with adding in any language with regards to dealing with employment and housing. I don't know if, Chris, you're going to be adding that in.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy fix from a
okay.
A wording perspective.
Right.
Are we all in agreement with that?
Employment and housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you didn't think about in this local law.
We thought about it. We just we looked at what provisions were covered by other laws. So I take the legislative intent remark by Legislator Heppner and the intent to support human rights in general, which is actually written into the intent by Legislator Bartels, into account. I would like to hear from other legislators who haven't spoken if there's any other thoughts about this.
I believe it's a noble cause to put in there, but it's totally unenforceable, especially on the employment level. How are you going to determine whether you've been asked up for a job because of your...
Well, you do the same thing now. How do you determine it's a matter of...
Well, that's what I'm saying. If there's laws already on the books for employment,
I think it's clear. Somewhat clear. And
housing,
not clear.
Housing. I'm fine with housing, but employment, it's very unenforceable. You walk in, and I'm just going to give you an example. This has nothing to do with gender. You walk in, and I've done this before, years ago. I walked into a trucking company wearing a suit and a tie, and I was applying for a job as a truck driver. And I didn't get the job. I could say they discriminated against me because I did the right thing, and I dressed up as a suit and a tie instead of dressed up in a burlap vest and, you know, a cowboy hat.
You were probably losing.
You blew it.
I blew it. See that? So, that's just an example.
I blew it being born female.
It's just an example. I mean, it's so hard to enforce.
It's enforceable. If I turn around and I tell Jennifer I'm not ironing her because she's a woman, that she has a...
you just pay me 79%.
No, I understand that.
Right. No, if I pay you 79%?
I just want to read something, if you don't mind, if you could indulge me for a moment. Transgender people are 4 times more likely to live in poverty. Oh, wait.
Nick.
This is from the transgender, one of the transgender rights organizations. There are several in the United States, and there have been many studies. This is the National Center for Transgender Equality. Transgender people are 4 times more likely to live in poverty, experience unemployment at twice the rate of the general population, with rates of people of color up to 4 times the national unemployment rate. 90% of transgender people report experiencing harassment, mistreatment, or discrimination on the job. We won't even go into police.
Well, I mean, that's why we're here doing this.
I just want to point out that these are statistics that, you know, people should be aware of.
But the point being is that, in other words, people, you're right, are not obvious often. When they are, when they discriminate against somebody, mm-hmm. But sometimes they are, and sometimes you can prove it was done for that particular reason, and that's why we put the laws in. People break laws all the time. We know that, but if we didn't pass laws, just because the other people break them, then we wouldn't have any laws, would we? Because all laws are broken. So, people break laws every day. I mean, that's the point. And people get away with them. Sometimes they get away with them, sometimes they don't. I mean, you know, that's the whole point. If I walked in for a job and they said, I'm not hiring you because you're an Irish American, I have a stand against them, even though it's not necessarily a protected class. But if they did that because of that, it's clear discrimination just, mm-hmm. Because of who I was born as.
Very well said. I think that's the same argument that can be made about working currently on gender, on women's issues in the workplace. Same intent.
So the prohibition at this point is, are we finished with prohibition? Or are we moving on?
Whatever.
We added the employment and housing. We're going to add that. All right, enforcement.
Enforcement.
Title 7.
I guess I'm not finished with my stand.
All right, go ahead. Go back to your other one.
Okay. There's an equal opportunity, for employees and employers. There's also a federal statute that states that you cannot discriminate on gender. It doesn't say transgender, but it says gender. So. What's that?
Which is not exactly the same thing we're talking about.
Well, but you may say that companies and corporations, I don't know about mom and pop stores, they're very, very careful about their employment practices because they can get sued, tremendously sued. This would just be a redundant clause in this local law because it's already enforced. I don't know, I just have a problem with employment. Now we're shoving this down employees, when they already have so many regulations on who they can hire, how they can hire them, how they treat their employees.
Now, at the risk of being redundant, to Carl's point on redundancy, this is, again, what I brought up in the beginning, there is a State Division of Human Rights, there's a federal EEOC, there's a Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. Any one of these agencies will take this complaint today. So this is kind of the question as to whether maybe it's a policy question, maybe it's a legal question, but as to whether we need to be legislating it on this topic given the machinery that's already in place. I think that's what Carl's trying to articulate, and that's a point that I would echo back to. No, not at all.
Any comments on that?
I would just defer to the sponsor
Chris?
I agree with counsel to the extent that employment and housing are very very regulated areas already. I completely agree with that. And adding those components would make this a different law than it is now. But I think ultimately it's a policy question whether the legislature wishes to dive into these areas at the county level or not. I don't know if it's a legal question per se, as long as it's drafted in an artful manner that doesn't result in any inconsistencies with federal or state statutes.
Do you want to recognize?
I'm sorry, I didn't see
you. No, if it's on that point, I have a different point.
Yep. It doesn't matter. Whatever you wish to, we can always go back to it.
I am very much against any form of discrimination in employment and housing. I'm just wondering if we add that in, if it doesn't impact the title of the bill.
In fact, I feel that what Council is suggesting, that what Councilor Rigucci is suggesting, is makes sense. That we keep this focus. Well, I really appreciate what you're saying about human rights and taking a stand on that. I think that sometimes incrementalism is the way you go to open the door to greater sensitivity, and that a human rights legislation can follow. We're trying to work across the aisle, and we're trying not to alienate anyone in this proposal. This proposal is about really trying just to work together to protect a class that has been reportedly unprotected.
So are we at the point where we're going to take the employment and housing out?
We're not going to add it.
I mean, it was put back in according to what you were talking about, so now we're taking it back out.
We're ripping it back in.
Okay, that's all I wanted to make sure. That's what my mindset is. Okay, fine. You know, I'd be happy with it the other way, but if people feel that it is better not to because it may change things too much and create more problems, then I'm fine with it.
Right.
So is everybody else fine with that?
Yep.
Okay, very good. Then now we're back to the other one.
Where
back
are we now?
Back to the written word.
Are we on to enforcement? Okay.
We are on enforcement.
We didn't do prohibition.
Do you have any more questions about that? I'm sorry, Chairman.
No problem. Any more on the prohibition? That's all right. I'm not that sensitive. Anything more about prohibition? Anything? And would you bring it up again, Carl, later on? No.
Oh,
just kidding.
No.
Just kidding. No problem. All right, enforcement. We're on enforcement. The opening on enforcement. The first part is more of an intent dealing with the enforcement, correct? Nick, you seem to be biting at the bit here.
That we brought it up at the last committee meeting, and so I don't know if at this point there had been any contemplated changes to the enforcement mechanism. Otherwise, I can sort of reiterate my view on it, and then you can go from there, which is just that I don't see the state enabling statute at 12D of the general municipal law or the provisions of the charter or administrative code as permitting the local human rights commission primarily to adjudicate, which is what this local law envisions it doing, seems to be beyond the scope of what local human rights commission has been authorized to do. So I think there'd be other amendments either to state or to the charter required to have that kind of thing occur. As current law exists, my view of it is the local human rights commission can accept this kind of a complaint, certainly under state law or if this local law passes in some form or another. But then what they would be empowered to do would be to refer it to the state division for adjudication is kind of my view of it. And that's not what this law contemplates.
Thank you. But Nick, we also covered this a little bit last month. I mean, clearly we actually have situations where we actually have quasi-adjudication. Like, for example, I mean, Tracy, you can speak on this because you were involved with it. With regards to the RA the county and the recycling law. You know, we've got, if memory serves, we've got a hearing officer involved in that particular law. So we clearly have instances where the county actually has quasi-adjudication going
animals.
On. Yeah, was that
the abuse of animals?
Abuse of animals. That's right. So I mean, so we clearly already have scenarios and situations here already under the current
charter. Sorry, the health department is the most notable. I mean, there's
fines. So I mean, so Nick, with all due respect, I don't really see that being a big stumbling block on this.
So I don't know if the provisions of those other laws are identical to what the state permits a human rights commission to do. I haven't reviewed the recycling rules or maybe they haven't been challenged.
Have you reviewed the ones that the state allows?
Correct. So speaking specifically to Article 12D of the General Municipal Law, which envisions creations of local human rights commissions, which is what Ulster County has done, there are certain functions that they're empowered to undertake. And one of the specifically enumerated functions not there would be adjudicating complaints or acting as a court. So essentially you'd be creating a court. Under this local law. The Human Rights Commission currently does not sit as a court. They can receive complaints, they can investigate them, they can conference them, they can mediate them, there can be conciliation, but they're not authorized to adjudicate a complaint, they're not authorized to levy a fine or act as a court.
Normally I know that, and I've seen these cases in the past, and I know that, like, for instance, I remember in the city of Kingston, there was an alderman at one point that was brought up on charges by the Human Rights Commission because he was accused of saying or doing something. But what the Human Rights Commission did was they were not allowed, I mean, they took the complaint, but you're right, what they did with the complaint was then, you know, it was the City Human Rights Commission. They took the complaint and then it was referred to the state. They took all the particulars down and then the state came and did it, which created a problem for him because it took like well over a year before the thing was, in other words, where he was exonerated. He really didn't do what was claimed, but meanwhile, he was on the front page that he, you know, was brought up on these human rights things. And then meanwhile, when they found that he didn't do it, it was, you know, a little blurb on, you know, on the want ads. No, almost. Not quite, but I mean, I'm exaggerating that part, but you know, we didn't even see it hardly. It was a tiny thing. Yeah.
I don't know if cities are distinct from counties in terms of the enabling legislation the council's talking to, because the New York City, the documents you've given us, the New York City Commission is empowered to assess penalties up to $125,000.
Yes, they are. They are. New York City actually is an entity unto itself. It has its own reference in the state executive law, making clear that they're empowered to do the things that they've done, or that the state law won't prevent them from doing it, maybe more accurately.
Right, they have a significant amount of abilities to do things in any other city anywhere.
Right.
They just see that they
in New York.
In what
yes. Chris?
To counsel's point, I would agree to the extent of the authority of the committee or commission to impose a civil penalty, a monetary penalty. But I do think that the enabling legislation specifically, can't talk today, subsection Q, C, allows the committee to inquire into incidents of tension and conflict. Now, it doesn't say adjudicate. But it certainly, to me, the word inquire means to investigate and hear a complaint. Maybe not impose a civil penalty, but certainly I think the authority is there for the commission to hear a complaint and make a determination. There's no doubt that they can make determinations. It's a question of what determinations they can make and where they have to refer it to. Perhaps an amendment can be made, and I've spoken with Legislator Brookie on this, that would basically permit the committee to refer its determination, refer to perhaps the county attorney or the state commission, either way.
And the county attorney will make a decision.
Anybody else?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it could be the county attorney, but the state commission certainly can receive the complaint.
Well, I know the state commission can, because I know that they've done before. I know, I listed one before, and I know a couple other cases that were done that way. But my concern is, of course, is, you know, these types of things you want to be done kind of quickly. You know, there was something, not that you want people to have justice, obviously, but, you know, both for the person that is being accused, because sometimes somebody can be accused of something not doing it, and then, it's based on, like, the guy that I know, the one alderman, and then, they should have that right to have something done quickly also, in other words, because it helps them out.
I would also note that anyone who is, suffering or being discriminated against can make a complaint to either the commission or anyone. I mean, if you call the sheriff and say, I'm being discriminated against, right? If you break another law, for example, and someone reports this, then the sheriff has the authority to enforce it, correct? The sheriff can technically enforce any local law that we have, at least in the county of Ulster, provided it's set forth in the law itself, and most of the time it is. But my point is that what if just a member of the commission refers it to the district attorney? Maybe the commission itself can't have a formal reference to the county attorney, but, any member can.
Yeah, but how is that solving the situation here? I mean,
the county attorney can prosecute it.
I mean, you'd have to say that one person can refer it. Yes.
I just Googling because it's because you can. And Suffolk County, New York, I'm just reading 528-14, damages and civil fines and penalties. In any matter where the executive director, this is of their Human Rights Commission, finds that a person has engaged in an unlawful discriminatory practice, the commissioner may award compensatory damages to the individual aggrieved by such a practice, impose payments to the county general fund, blah, 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 not to exceed $50,000, not to exceed $100,000 to be paid to the county general fund. So Suffolk County has a commission that's authorized to impose fines and payable to individuals and or the county.
But in defense of some of the other things that have been said, though, we don't know what Suffolk County's commission has been authorized to do in the past.
But we know, based on that there's the ability for a county to do that. So that needs to be...
That was that ever challenged?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know either, but that's right here.
But everything can be challenged. It's America. You have the right to sue anybody at any time for any reason.
New York City's law.
I
just want to point out New York City's law, which is attached to your agenda on the last page. The penalties can be imposed up to $125,000 and $250,000 for malicious conduct, so willful or malicious conduct. So these fines are pretty hefty in comparison to what we're proposing here.
But I think the argument has been that New York City has has some serious preemptive powers that cities that other than any that a county doesn't have,
mm-hmm.
or any other cities for that matter in New York. There's 8 million people hanging out there. They kind of have a little bit of. They have a little say, and the state has passed special legislation for them repeatedly.
Oh. Yeah, the only comment I would echo you on, Legislator Donaldson, on the issue of if Suffolk County, there are other localities in New York that have enacted these type of laws, they haven't been challenged that I've been able to uncover. So if the purpose of this law is to create a law that's enforceable or that works, I know that the Ulster County Bar is full of very clever defense lawyers, and if I could find the AG opinions that say human rights commissions can't do what this law envisions Ulster doing, then they can find it. And if it is challenged, then ultimately what you end up doing is creating a situation where you have the people you're trying to protect left without a remedy. As the law gets thrown out, and maybe they've missed their window to make a claim to the state division where they probably should be going. So that's, something to keep in mind as far as taking a serious look at the enforcement mechanism.
To counsel. So, Chris, you know, given what we just sort of heard now, I mean, if we actually have a problem with the enforcement officer being the Commissioner of Human Rights, I mean, what's the local alternative?
As in other local laws we have, you could just leave it to the county, to the Ulster County Sheriff to enforce it, made with complaints made by the general public, whoever's suffering from the law or whoever observes it, and you bypass the commission's involvement.
Well, wouldn't the commission be able to refer it to the sheriff? They could do the findings and they could refer the whole thing to the sheriff's department. Why couldn't they?
I don't disagree with you. I think, to counsel's point, the enabling statute doesn't specifically or expressly provide the commission with that authority. I personally think that could happen, and I don't foresee a problem with that. But if you want to talk about a solution that would bypass any issue in the future, you could just have it enforced as every other local law is enforced in this county through the sheriff and the county attorney's prosecution.
It does say under General Municipal Law, Section 239R, which is the powers and duties, Section E, that they can encourage and stimulate agencies under the jurisdiction of the governing board, which created the commission, to take such action. So does that not include the sheriff?
Arguably. I mean, there's really no definitive answer. I mean, it's basically something that I don't think has ever been litigated.
No, not that I could find, other than the AG opinions that, you know, that I've come across.
What were the AG opinions?
Yeah, I mean, I can send you citations, but basically, and I think maybe, I don't know if Chris, maybe you've come across them as well in the annotations, but essentially they take a look at 12D and say this is what your local commission can do, and there are several verbs that, you know, the actions that they say this board can undertake, and one of them that's not included would be receiving and adjudicating or passing upon these type of complaints. So,
but they could hear the complaints. They right? They can take the complaints.
They can take them, and you know the verbs that they use. If I can find my notes here, I think I or you have the actual statute in front of you, Chris. They say, for instance, you can investigate, review, conference, study, and report. And they say, well, okay, we're going to determine those terms not to include acting as a court. And you're not going to receive a complaint.
So if they receive a complaint, you know, they receive the complaint, you came before them, and you filed a complaint. They can receive the complaint. They can investigate the complaint, right? They can come up with, they can actually call if it was an employer or somebody else there. They can call the tavern, shall we say, or whatever it was, and the owner, and talk to them about it and maybe solve the problem. Or they can also turn around and hand this whole thing over as to the sheriff. Well, as a saying that this is a complaint we received on this, and this is the facts that we've gotten from this. And then, of course, the sheriff would have to then, I mean, let's face reality, he would have to conduct his own investigation, but he would be able to use theirs actually to help him conduct the investigation because he knows the people he's going to have to talk to.
Right. I mean, I think what Chris pointed out was that we don't know if the sheriff can do that or not, but we know that the State Human Rights Commission can accept a referral, as was the case in the city of Kingston.
Well, yeah, I know they can do that. We can refer it to them. So what would be the problem with our commission making the decision whether they want to refer this to the state or refer it to the sheriff?
Or both.
Well, yeah, I don't know if they could do both. But once you have
Why not?
Well, once you have a proceeding pending in one venue, it might preclude the same.
I don't know. I mean, if I have a complaint, I'd like the shotgun
right.
effect.
Well, I know, but
I want to complain everybody I can get. Don't get it solved, right?
Right. But for instance, if I were to make a complaint with the state division, I'm not going to be able to proceed in the federal EEOC at the same time. It's you go in one form, and that's what the law permits.
Well, then what we can do is say they can make the decision on where they would refer it to. I mean, they could refer it to, if they refer it to the, if they feel that it is so egregious that they don't want to wait for the state commission to deal with it, they can go right to the sheriff, and the sheriff can turn around and make a determination and then move forward from that end, right?
Like an appearance ticket or something?
Well, I don't know what they would do.
In front of who?
Right, well, yeah.
In front of who, though? A judge.
Judge.
A county judge? City judge?
It would depend on where it happened. If it happened in the city of Kingston, it would go probably before the city judge.
See, here's the thing that I, may I speak? And I know Nick's, I think he's pretty much explained it. If you get the sheriff's department involved after the fact, I don't think it's going to do any good unless you have some chain of command. Complaint comes to the Human Rights Commission within 15 days of whatever had happened. The Human Rights Commission decides we're going to give it to the sheriff, and the sheriff is going to all of a sudden show up at the tavern or bar you know, wherever the employer's place of business, and offer them a... I mean, it's just too complicated. I am in favor of, because I think this would happen anyway, as soon as someone comes and complains before the Ulster County Human Rights Commission, they're going to take it to the state level. And once the commission validates their claim, they're going to go in civil court. Because I don't care. Human nature is human nature. Once your you know, human rights are violated, you're going to take it to as far as you can go. If we, you know, if we have provision that the Human Rights Commission, just to get it off their plate or to make it faster, give it to the Sheriff's Department, I just think it's sidetracking the whole idea of human rights.
Yeah. I just want to slow down for a second. We're talking about the sheriff and the DA and stuff, but again, Legislative Bartels cited an example from Suffolk County. With a simple Google search on my smartphone, I found an example of the Human Rights Commission in Westchester County not only imposing fines for basic public accommodation, but housing and employment. Mm-hmm. So I know there's been some say of, must not have been challenged, but these are two major counties outside of the city of New York. Mm-hmm. Before, there's examples here where even further than what we're trying to do. So I think before we get into hypotheticals elsewhere, let's get affirmation that, you know, since there's obviously other counties doing this through the commission, because.
And how do they refer it to in the commission? How does the commission deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar language to what Legislative Bartels wrote. I mean, this is an example where they, in 2007, they expanded it, Westchester's civil rights, human rights legislation to include housing and employment. But the same type of language, you know, fine up to $10,000. To the person aggrieved by such practice, for then again, this is for employment, but it's imposed by the commission. And they are empowered under the local law in Westchester County.
And to just, if I may, that point to touch on that. And again, thank you, Legislator Hepner, for bringing that up, because that's part of where I was going to go with this. But even go further. So if we're relying upon a referral from our local commissioner on human rights to the state division of human rights, are we then basically asking the state to go and enforce our local law? That seems incongruent. I mean, you would basically have local enforcement for a local law that we've passed. Because remember, if you're not referring it up to the state commission, well, then they're going to base it off of their own internal codes, not off of ours.
I mean, these are two major counties that have empowered their commissions, just like we've empowered our commissioner of health to impose fines on restaurants, you know.
Or our hearing officer, basically, because of the recycling law. Yeah.
I just wanted to point out from my own perspective, after reviewing the materials that I reviewed in drafting this, I, from a legal perspective, feel comfortable with the enforcement mechanism as it's written, based upon not only the other examples in other counties, but also the vagueness of much of the language set forth in 12D of the municipal law. I feel like we have a decent leg to stand on here, in my legal opinion.
$10,000, that's a big fine.
That was just in the the employment
housing
section.
Employment.
Mm-hmm.
Up to. But I believe that included legal costs as well.
Think of how much a civil lawsuit can take in from a housing development or a public entity or a private corporation. That's why I think the state should get involved, because it's only going to go to a civil trial.
Well, my only problem with that is, and we can often do that, and we hear that all the time, let's say, oh, the state should be doing this, the state should be doing this. Well, we have to regulate ourselves, and we have to make sure that what we're doing is proper for our citizens, and we can't just turn around and tell them, oh, well, the state should be coming down. Well, be nice. I mean, I don't have a problem with sometimes even when we talk about these mandates. But you know what? We're taking care of our own people. So maybe the state is mandating us to do that, and they're mandating us to do that because too many decide they don't want to do it. And that's one of the reasons why they have mandates in the first place. And I agree, oh, well, maybe the state should come down and do that. Well, you know what? We have to take care of our own, and that's what we're attempting to do in this case. We're attempting to take care of our own. And so we're looking at putting together a resolution that is protecting a certain class of people that have not been protected. So my take on it is, yeah, I mean, if we can get the state to do all these things and do it quickly, well, and do it right, we don't know if they're going to do it right. We don't know if they're going to do it quickly. No, I mean, I'm comfortable with it. If Chris is comfortable with it, I'm comfortable with it.
In fact, in states where more localities lead, the states then lead. Just the way this works.
Right, right. It's often the localities lead and the states that react to it. And in other cases, these states actually put resolutions to the laws together to make sure that localities do certain things to protect their...
In the case of the map that we have, it's more likely that it is the localities leading and that it is the more progressive states, for the most part, not always, as evidenced by recent events.
All right, so where are we heading for this at this point?
I'm personally comfortable with what we've already got on the page here,
so
A through D, which basically would empower us.
Now, we put the hearing officer together after for the last time, correct?
What's that?
Chris?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We put the hearing officer together after the last time. Was that added? What was the one that we were going to, because I know Rich Parody had a concern with the idea that it was just...
No, he had a concern.
I didn't add that language. I'm not sure.
Okay.
He had a concern with the a member or designee of the Human Rights Commission. So we made a note of that and agreed that it has to only be a member, I believe, of the commission.
So do we actually have that written out? Sorry.
I have it in a previous version, and we'll make sure to go through
it. Yeah, because he's supposed to be a member of that Human Rights Commission in order to be
not a designee, but an appointed member of the commission.
Yeah, it's either the Human Rights Commissioner or an appointed member by the commission.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That is a member of the commission.
Right. In essence, yeah.
Which, that's why they're there.
In actuality.
Yes.
I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. I'm sorry.
You look very devilish
I'm
looking at it from all angles, because I think if we're talking about human rights, it's got to be fair to everybody. Okay? Now, this is an unprotected class right now. We're trying to make it protected. Hear me out. I file a complaint with the Human Rights Commission, and I feel like I've got a valid complaint. And our Human Rights Commission is made up not of judges, right, not of lawyers, but of average citizens. We're just doing the right thing. Now, they dismiss my case.
85 people of our peers.
Right, so they dismiss my case because they don't feel like I have a case. I may not be able to go to the state then in a civil lawsuit, to get adjudicated on the state level, because it's already been determined in a adjudication that I don't have a case. Now, that's a disservice to the person who's bringing that case forward.
This could work okay.
$250 fine, and you feel validated.
I mean, you're telling me that you're not going to go to the state?
Are you
going to go to court?
I mean, it could be a res judicata if you're establishing a tribunal and it's a contested hearing and there's a record and there's evidence of witnesses and there's a verdict. You may not be able to then litigate that in another forum. It's possible.
Yeah, but isn't that also then? But that's actually provided though in D where you can file. I mean, you can file an Article 78. Yeah, in that particular instance,
that's the challenge.
Sure, I'm saying, but to address Carl's concern with regards to whether or not for whatever reason, the commission doesn't think Carl has a case. Maybe they just don't like Carl. Whatever the case may be, regardless, there's still a remedy right there, indeed.
Yeah, I don't see that. I mean, I understand where you're coming from. That could happen to anybody at anywhere.
Right.
You know, you go before somebody and they're, you know. But yes. You always have a remedy at some point. If you're pushy enough, you go to the next move. You go to the state and apply. Or you go to your county legislator and say, hey, look at the Human Rights Commission. They threw my case out, and this is what took place. And I know damn well if he came to me and it looked like it was valid, I would be over at the Human Rights Commission.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I mean, counsel interrupt me if I'm wrong, but I mean, it's not that different of a situation. We have planning boards that are X number of peers appointed with the authority to make decisions. They have an appeals process. They can, and you can also challenge them. I mean, it's not an unheard of concept.
Now, you might not be able to litigate de novo. In other words, you couldn't bring your claim anew in another forum. You'd be stuck with whatever record you had, and then the appellate rights, which are usually not, you know, they're restricted. Mm-hmm. So Article 78 requires you to show as an arbitrary and capricious finding, which is a high standard. So I think, I don't know if that's the concern that's being put forth here, but that's... That could be the way it plays out.
I think, to some extent, I think the framework as presented is correct. You won't get two bites of the apple. You get to litigate your case through the commission, and then you can appeal pursuant to Section Article 78 of the CBLR to the state for the review.
But that's only on the case of the defendant, not the plaintiff. Article 78.
Well, the plaintiff is the people of the county of Ulster.
I think anyone can appeal on the basis of something.
Yeah, you'd have to be an aggrieved party.
Right.
So.
Right.
Okay.
No, anything else? Are we, it doesn't seem to be like a happy medium on this one yet. I'm looking for happy.
People are happy. Thank you.
Well, this is where the rubber meets the road.
Do you have any comment?
Not on this section. I have just one small, what I think is a typo on section 6.
Can I just make one more comment?
All right, we didn't get there. Don't rush it.
Just let it down, please. Can I just make one comment? In general, with respect to which tribunal or commission would be more appropriate? I mean, obviously, if there's a complaint, we're going to be dealing with local people, right? Local issues, perhaps, local places, and it would seem that the local commission would be the best body to hear such a problem, such a complaint,
yes.
And not at the state level.
No, but a complaint can come from anybody. They don't have to be local. They could be somebody visiting here.
Well, sure,
that,
of
that
course.
Law protects them.
But it's most likely going to be against some another person here or
but it would
place
be
there.
People
whatever.
In Ulster County being discriminated against in Ulster County,
right?
Whether they live here or not, it's still a local
correct.
Issue.
You have any comments, James?
No, I'm satisfied with this.
Tracy, anything else? Nick, anything else?
No, I mean, I think I've kind of outlined my thoughts on it. Just to, again, reiterate that the annotations, the authority from the Attorney General indicates local human rights commissions are not to be quasi-judicial tribunals. I understand that other municipalities may have set this up. If you check, those municipalities have comprehensive human rights laws. They have fully evolved human rights statutes, whether it's Westchester or Suffolk, certainly New York City. Ulster County does not have that.
Well, would we be able to get the Westchester and Suffolk County human rights, you know, their, whatever their human rights
law
is? Yeah, get those for us. Because if that's the case, maybe we need to readjust the entire situation and, you know, put something together that's more expensive or maybe even more.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to beat this horse dead. I just have one more question. Because I...
You just cut up. Go ahead.
That's right. We're going to make glue. How does the Human Rights Commission deal right now with human rights violations? How do they
good
deal
question.
With that right now?
I don't know. I think they refer them to the state.
So,
which is what they're empowered to do.
I mean, they do
empower them to do.
But it's not fair. It's not fair to the other protected groups now because they're getting thrown into the state. Right?
No, because
and
they're
this,
actually
this protected
added
group
here
is going to be added.
They're in here also.
They're in here.
May I just respond that I don't think it matters because they're empowered to deal with these things, whether they have been dealing with them yet or not.
Well, we need to get a copy of those two laws and let's see if we get an idea of what they have in there and how extensive their abilities are. In other words, if they do have extensive laws and therefore that's what they're backing themselves on, you know, there may be a point here that we need to do a more extensive law first. I mean, I don't mean to jump on that thing, but if that's what we need to do,
well,
that's what we may need to do.
I'd also like to see the relevant sections of 292. You know, just a link. And
all right, we'll get that to you. Did you get that? The relative sections of 292?
Yeah. And also...
One meeting here. Nick?
Could we get clarification if the Human Rights Commission automatically sends things to the state? My sense is they may deal with some things already in the county, so I just want to get clarification on that.
I believe they attempt to solve the problem locally is what they do, is they make phone calls. They, they'll, you know, that's the way they usually follow through on those. And then try to solve the problem before sending anything to the state. That's what they attempt to do.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you sort of a preamble from one of the state opinions. It advises the purpose of the local municipal human rights commission is to encourage neighbors to reason together to reduce tension, not to exercise quasi-judicial powers. So it's what you're suggesting, which is they sort of act as a mediator. They engage in the process of the conference and conciliation, not adjudication and punishment. So it's a completely different creature.
Right, right. But I think, but the way I read that, I mean, I'm not an attorney, but I'm reading it also the same. Yeah, it's not the commission is not meant to go in and adjudicate these issues right off the bat. Their job is to try to get the community together. To say, hey, look, you were doing this, and can you understand how that was wrong? and you try to get the situation where then maybe they could get to understand that that is wrong, and then hopefully the person that brought the complaint says, okay, I'm satisfied, because then they probably would be. That's a lot of times people just want, you know what, I'm sorry, I didn't realize, I didn't think. And when you say that, that solves the problem. But I think the point is, if you can't solve the problem like that, that's where, in other words, the mindset of setting up a Human Rights Commission is to solve the problem, bring people together. But if you have to, it says not to adjudicate, but doesn't say you can't. It makes the point that the purpose of it is not to be doing that. The purpose of it is solving the problem. And then if you have to adjudicate, I guess maybe... So, I mean, I guess you could read it that way, could you not?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and maybe I need to clarify, but some of the, I found it to be interesting anyway. If you look at when the state law was put into effect, it was in the late 1960s, 1968, I think it's here. So what was going on in 1968, right? You had the civil rights movement, and what they specifically referred to in the statute was problems involving race, creed, color, national origin. They don't even get into gender issues, and that's a topic I haven't really raised at this point, but... That's what was going on, was to say, look, we have these localities, these cities, you know, Yonkers, other places where there were big problems. And you were talking about riots and buildings on fire and people committing acts of violence. This wasn't set up to punish people. It was set up to bring people together and solve problems. And that's what the legislative history shows, is what, as you're saying. So the question is, can you now evolve that entity to become a court? My thought is no, it's not authorized. You either have to get state legislation, or if you don't agree with that, I think at a minimum the county charter has to be amended. Mm-hmm. They're just simply not empowered to act in the way that this law wants them to act. So.
All right. Well, anybody have any? I don't necessarily agree with you, Nick, but I certainly understand your argument. And certainly there's a lot of validity to it, but I mean, I still think that the mindset is to solve the problem. You're right, but what if you can't? Hand it over to somebody else? Oh, not my problem anymore.
It doesn't address the issue of that. At that point, you're then relying upon a state board to be enforcing what is, in essence, a local Ulster County law.
Well, Nick's argument would be that you already have it in the state anyway.
Yeah, but then if we're really boiling it down, and I apologize, Nick, but then your position is that we don't need this law at all.
Well, it's a policy issue, although there are preemption arguments. You know, the governor has issued his position on it, saying he's got a statewide policy that's in effect. He wants to avoid patchwork codes from town to town or county to county, so that if you go to Orange County, the kind of things Ulster County is trying to work on, you know, would not.
But the remediation for that, though, is a statewide law.
Which is what's in place. Not, I understand you're using the term law, but there is a regulation and there is a remedy. That much we really can't dispute.
But if that were the case, then we wouldn't have human rights laws in so many counties. That's not a patchwork. That's a remedy that they've seen as their purview.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to point out, but council and I disagree on this point. In my view, there is no preemption issue here. The state has failed to pass a law. We are passing a law. A regulation won't preempt our local law. And we are also going much above and beyond, in my view, the regulation that's in place currently.
We do disagree on that, but the reverse preemption clause does refer to regulations. So if you don't agree the regulation preemption, you want to address that. If you take a look at that paragraph, I know we can get there yet.
Well, I put it in there to cover the law.
What was that? I'm sorry, I missed your last point.
No, the reverse preemption portion of the proposed law does refer to regulation as a potential preempting agent. So
right.
It's in the text of the law as written currently. We may disagree about whether this regulation preempts or not. You know, I believe there's an argument that it does. Whether you accept that or not as a legal proposition, I understand, may or may not, but then there's a policy issue of whether this just becomes redundant given the breadth of the state right that's in place.
All right, so we've got, is there any problem? We're back down to, we're looking at right now, we're going to, so everybody recap here, we're going to get the laws from Westchester County and Suffolk County. We're going to get the clarification and the code that Nick is referring to.
The
we've got the code, the language.
State code that the relevant part of the state code, which is 292, I think it was, mm-hmm. right?
Subsection
we're going to have that.
Nine.
Section 9, I believe. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. And then, okay.
Thank you.
So we can move on that end. All right. Now, the penalty is relatively low here.
Yes.
The penalty is very low here.
Well, it's kind of like the RRA fees. It's cheaper for these violators to pay the fee than to not take the trash out of the county.
Well, I'm beginning to rethink that old thing when it comes to
what we did before with the RRA again. But
are we talking about flow control?
Flow control, yeah. I'm looking. I'll be against that. I will be against that if we bring that up again. I can tell you that. But anyway, let's move on to this. The penalties. Then can we look at them? Yes.
It just seems to me we usually do a graduated penalty, and might want to consider that. You know, right now it's.
This be an individual, too, by the way? Any individual violates? Or, oh, no, you want person.
Person.
That one, that's right. That one is one person.
Yes, it's true that most examples we look at have graduated penalties for the unintentional, potentially, versus the egregious offense. And I'm not sure if we intentionally started this low to avoid conflict here, but I think that it's worth discussion.
I mean, ultimately, it's a policy issue. How punitive do you want to get? You know, as a legislative body, it's really up to the body to make that decision.
I think also to the extent that you're the enforcement part of this is finding that there was indeed an offense. Someone can take it beyond that as they wish. I mean, it can be referred, and then it's not just about the fine.
Well, it's referred, and then it can turn into a civil case.
That's right.
Sue the agency.
That's right.
And then they have the finding of the mm-hmm. Human Rights Commission to back them up.
In essence, it's not the only penalty.
It would be probably would be better to keep the penalty lower, because sometimes people may just say, okay, it's wrong, and I'll pay mm-hmm. the penalty, and we'll move on. I won't ever do it again.
Mm-hmm. But
same thing I tell the officer when they pull me over and I speed.
I'm sure you never speed.
Once.
I started to change my mind, you know.
I did my work over.
Me again.
Well, she hasn't talked in a little while. So
I just wanted to echo that I like Mana's suggestion of the graduated penalty, and also I feel it's a little low. I totally understand the intent, but just to put it in perspective, the mandatory source separation law, which was passed in 1991, the penalty, they haven't been changed, and the fine for not separating out recycling is $1,000 per violation per day, and up to 5 days imprisonment. So that's the penalty for not throwing away, not separating a can. And that was 1991's law. We didn't update that. So I'm not saying, but I'll go with whatever.
I mean, I understand the graduation on that. No, I understand that mindset. On the other hand, by keeping it low, may have a better chance of getting passed through, more people voting for it. And at the same time, what happens is if it is that egregious, them being able to then bring civil suit against the whoever that person is, and you can say, hey, look, I go to see Chris, and I say, I'll go see his boss.
I go see Joe and I say, Joe, look at this. I was discriminated against this, and that's I want to go after them. And here, even the Human Rights Commission said they were wrong. You do have more remedy at that point. But, hopefully that will settle and solve the problem. Often people just say, okay, I'm satisfied. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking for repeat offenders. It should be, once and that's it. We shouldn't make laws to help people in civil court sue other people. We should make this law clear, don't do it again.
Well, that's what the 250
is. The intent of our Human Rights Commission is not a springboard for somebody to sue someone for millions of dollars.
But if they're that egregious, then...
They could do that without the Human Rights Commission, and that's my whole argument with that. But the fine, what if you get...
That's kind of hard to go in and actually get somebody to do something of that nature, going in and saying that this
all
is
you
what...
need is a lawyer.
How many attorneys are going to take a case like that when they, in other words, there's nothing there? In other words, there's the amount of, what are they going to get out of it?
All right.
You're not going to get too many attorneys are going to move in unless there's something, no offense to attorneys, but you're there to make money.
Right. Well,
and you're not going to be able to make money on a case unless it's pretty egregious.
Right. Well, the federal statutes give you attorney's fees, so that's why they go to federal court.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The only way you would get an attorney to do that is if it was egregious enough that
no.
But you're right, they could go to the attorney right off the bat, but then...
I agree with the $250 penalty. I mean, what else can you do? Hope that no one's going to be a repeat offender.
So, John.
I would, take it a little bit further than what Legislative Figlio said in terms of not repeating, but also the purpose of laws are also to prevent, be preventative. So I think we should consider what is an appropriate fine to prevent the discrimination from happening in the first place.
It's supposed to be repeated.
That's something we would also, in my opinion, in creating this local law, is also the objective is to prevent instances from occurring. That's why people don't do certain things because they're aware of the penalty.
Mm-hmm. So is the distinction between, as it was written in some of the other graduated laws, the distinction between a less intentional versus a more egregious, and I don't know the exact language, but it was something along those lines. Do you agree with Legislator Green that
Yeah, I just think I can't pinpoint a perfect number, but I think it's something we should consider before moving forward is, what do we think is as a policy is an appropriate number to both prevent acts from occurring and reoccurring.
So can we turn it back to you and say that if you think, yes, you...
Well, I was commenting on the graduated... fines and saying that I didn't want it because, $250, we don't want repeat offenders. That's not going to prevent. A graduated fine is going to just punish you again. It's not going to prevent them. $10,000 first offense is going to prevent it.
Well, I mean,
are you proposing that make it a $10,000 fine?
I don't. Absolutely not.
What are you proposing? The $250?
My agreement was... $250, that's it. What can you do?
So that won't prevent it, but you
it's
would
like
to
it's not going to prevent it, but I'm not making that case. You are. I don't believe
you. I'm not saying
you are. I don't believe you are.
Yeah, you are.
You're you're getting on board. I like this. Come on.
So,
you can't prevent a lot of things in this life. You're not going to prevent human rights.
You just got finished at 10,000 would prevent it.
Money's not going to do
it. Are you withdrawing that statement that 10,000 would prevent it? Are you withdrawing that statement?
To echo Legislator Bill, perhaps an increased fine.
Perhaps
would be $10,000,
right?
We
can
actually.
All right, we're getting a little giddy here.
I just wanted to thank everyone for the amount of time they're giving us.
With the numbers here, with the penalty situation here, what are we looking at?
Does anybody want more on this? Do you want to graduate? You brought up the idea that it shouldn't be graduated. The first fine be $250, the second offense,
well, how
you know, $1,000 or whatever.
How much is it going to cost the Human Rights Commission to investigate these?
I think the county attorney can...
Money?
Well, it's going to be... what's going to happen when anything? Will you investigate any law? Pass a law, you're going to have to investigate, you're going to have to do it.
Sheriff's Office Week basically is, you know, you're paying for it no matter what.
Does the Human Rights Commission have counsel?
Yes. They do have counsel, but they also have, I think, two attorneys on it.
Paid counsel.
Right. They're not volunteers.
I like that suggestion too.
They do have a,
two
of the people on it are our attorneys.
Oh.
That are on the commission, but I don't know. I think they do. They have. I think they have counsel.
I think they do.
I'm sure they have counsel, but only for their counsel may, in fact, just be the county attorney. But I'm not sure.
How are we going to find out more about the human rights?
Find out if, the next question. Got to find out if
I want to find out what their jurisdiction is now.
How they communicate for counsel?
It's in state law.
I know David Clegg is on the union counsel. Human rights, and he's an attorney.
And do they spend money on?
There's another one on there. I'm not sure.
But Clegg is a.
Yeah, I know David Clegg.
Who's on the?
I believe he's the chairman.
Right? Human Rights Commission.
I think David may be the chairman now. I'm not sure.
Oh, he was chairing last week's meeting.
Appointed one or two
this year.
And also
hold on
a moment.
Human
I didn't print it out.
All right, so you got that all
on? Oh, yeah, Brian Shapiro.
I believe the chairman appointed.
He's on it. Yeah, he's on a lawyer.
No, I know that. Yeah.
Okay, just a moment.
Sure. All right.
Yeah, I think that if we are going to consider graduated, we should look at, you know, some of the other legislation that we've passed that does start in this range. And, you know, I don't know whether animal abuse or... I just think that the idea of somebody comes back a second time and a third time, there ought to be some acknowledgement that they're being...
Right.
You know, they're just... they have no intention of obeying.
Mm-hmm. And for them, the 250 is merely a...
250, 500, and 1,000 or something like that. I don't know how much of a...
Go ahead, John.
I was thinking Legislator Berkey pointed out that 200 plus municipalities have created such local laws, so I'm sure if we can look into find some type of consistency.
Let's stop New York City.
I have one other thing.
This
is getting late.
Did you want the one Carl from New York City, the $125,000? You said
that'll prevent it from happening.
What would we do with that kind of fine? You know what we'd do? We'd have to probably kick up half of it to the state.
So, on the fines, do I have anything definitive that everybody would be happy with?
I mean, I think that there are counties to the south of us who certainly their numbers are a little closer to reality.
All right, well, we're going to get that those anyway.
Yeah.
So right.
We have 25 and 50. That's a little high, right. But
we have Westchester and Suffolk.
I suggest that we move on. That we're going to basically we're going
to
review.
We are very happy to report that to everyone, and we
All right, but six is probably just.
You're not going to get it out.
Six is in everyone.
No, I understand that. I'm not.
Sorry, we reduced the preemption. Any problem with that? Everybody's happy?
That's what he said. Well, only what I said, which is that it's as it reads currently.
I have a typo, I think, on six.
It adopts my argument, which is you're preempted by regulation. Because it's specific to the first regulation. I don't know if you can modify this or if this is standard language.
I think this is typically standard language in case the event that we do something that is, a problem with the state.
Right, so...
Can I make a suggestion at the opinion of counsel? What if we established earlier that the regulation is not as strong as the law, if it had been the law? That it would So what if we amended it to say this local law shall be null and void on the day that a federal or state should change, be changed to or, I believe. I'm correct.
Well, you should actually, or, you should take out the word a, but
yeah.
We're not going to say that.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that that's...
I mean, it already says legislation.
I guess.
Was the following clause, I guess, where the disjunctive or, and then it promulgates regulations, so there are regulations that are in effect. That's...
And but however, again, I would argue that we get into how different this is by comparison to those regulations,
mm-hmm.
specifically. However, that said, we could just, of course, just remove the word regulation.
Well, I guess that gets to the heart of the issue. I think Chris and I disagree on whether it does or doesn't. I feel that it does, and frankly, the state regulation is more comprehensive than what this law does. It covers more categories of discrimination, and it covers more categories or classes of persons. This is a very narrow piece of legislation. Only deals with public accommodation, only deals with transgender persons. So we can disagree on it legally, but that's the position I think that we've not come to any kind of consensus on.
Why restrict it there? We can describe it personally.
A question for Chris. Do we have to have this reverse preemption in there at all? I mean, we're arguing about what it says, what it doesn't. What happens if it's not there? Just,
Well, if it's not there, then the state passes.
It preempts us if they do.
Yeah, it's right? Preempted. I mean,
but
yeah. That's able to have preemption anyway.
It's made irrelevant once it's superseded.
Right, but we almost don't need to even have something saying.
Well, Nick's argument is by putting it in there, why we're also having the standard language, then it's already preempted. He's claiming.
Right, and so I'm saying to preempt his argument, just take out the whole section.
But it's...
Or just delete the word regulation.
I think the other aspect is... I don't know. If you take it out, does that not leave some people not protected in a sense because you're not throwing something in there?
No, this is talking about it being null and void if mm-hmm. federal or statewide legislation goes into effect. Federal or statewide legislation goes into effect, it's more comprehensive.
But it has, but it also has four regulations.
Right. That's why.
So that's why I'm suggesting to take the whole thing out, and
just
on some level, it takes away Nick's argument.
Just an observation.
Okay, observation.
That way we're here to take
it. It addresses. No, I'm taking this observation to heart. I'm saying, right. I'm trying to solve the problem, and we're having a discussion about legislation.
But why do we put it in anyway if it's already assumed that if this happens, it's null and void?
That's what I'm asking. So why not just take it out?
Because if it's not in there, who's going to make this null and void until the first time you try a case and the state says you can't do it?
Well, you need to do that or just take the regulation part out. I'm just making a suggestion. You can just take the regulation part out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, regardless, I don't think it really has much of an effect one way or the other.
I say we leave it in.
I think we should keep it in.
I do too. I mean, I don't see it hurting anything.
It's like it doesn't go without saying.
If Nick is right, if his observation is right, then it's not going to hurt anything, and mm-hmm. it's not going to help anything.
And the worst case,
if
we just have to correct
it. It invalidates the law.
Right.
If your observation is correct, it would validate the law, but we still have the other law. So you're not losing. But if your observation is incorrect, then our law stands and it's no problem. So regardless, they're protected whether.
Well, we could have an argument about whether or not it stands versus taking out at the very least.
Well, our argument, it does stand. My argument is, his argument is, her argument is, and Chris's argument is, it does stand, I think. Right.
Yep. So, all right. So, section 7.
But lawfully taking that section out, and then being discovered that counsel is right, that's not very legislative. Taking it out just, let it be vetted in the venue it needs to be vetted in. We're taking it out just because we're covering our own asses. I don't go for that.
I'm not taking it out. I want to be
on my own.
Okay. I mean, I don't mean to say asses.
but you did.
Mean, that's a poor way to approach the local law, is to say, oh, this is where we're going to get around it, okay? Maybe that this law is already...
You always put that, these things in local laws for protection of everybody.
Or it may not be.
The purpose of that, the purpose of that more than just, in other words, it covers your legislative ask, that we use your terminology, but it also covers the people in that if there is a problem with it, they still have the default thing to go to. So if somebody says, oh, this is unconstitutional or this is whatever, well, then they still have the other thing to go to. So all that does is sort of like letting that know that that's reality.
Right.
Okay.
So I
mean,
understand.
I've
that's
seen these things. I've been doing. I've been involved in local government for a little over 30 years, and I think they always put them in, whether it's city of Kingston or the county.
I mean, look, the state may come up with a comprehensive law that is an incredible.
That'd be great. It's already there.
That's right.
But I mean, a law, not a regulation.
No, but you're talking about passing, you know what I mean? To go further, Carl, that the state will pass, because it's already been written, the state will actually pass that law.
No.
All we need is the state standard.
Anyway, I'm done.
Do you want to speak to...
Are we done?
All right, where are we at?
We're done? We're done ripping this thing to shreds.
No.
Okay. We're done? Now... We will be meeting on the next Monday. We have the regular meeting of Laws and Rules.
We will be there.
And at that point, we'll either pass it as amended to go to the floor, or we will, you know, continue to work on it depending on what people want to do. We'll make that call on Monday. We will have the new laws together for... I mean, I'm looking at the extent of human rights laws, and let's take a look at what they have in there, and maybe if we do need to adjust them, we'll adjust, but I mean,
I have a question. We still have the resolution. It's before us. So I make a motion to discuss the resolution. It's got to come to a vote. You're just not going to vote on it?
We are referring it back to the meeting on the next Monday.
We're talking about the public hearing.
By a vote?
We are taking no action at this point. We're taking action when the rest of the committee meets. We have two people.
I never heard. Is that what you guys just discussed? That we're taking no action?
He actually said that at the beginning of the meeting.
I said at the beginning of the meeting we're going to try to work through this thing, and then we'll be voting up. We're meeting again on Monday, so we'll have a vote on Monday.
We're missing half the committee.
I didn't take a vote on that. You're correct. Maybe I'm making an assumption I shouldn't have made.
I don't
Does anybody
know.
Have a problem with taking
that
no
was
action?
So long ago. It must have been over my head.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone, really, for giving this as much study as it deserves, and I appreciate your being here in support or in studiousness. I also want to just extend my wishes to Legislative Roberts for his speedy recovery of his daughter.
Are we
I do need a motion to adjourn. Yes, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I'm seconded by...
No, we determined earlier that we weren't going to vote on anything, so why should we vote on that?
Carl, when you walk out the door, we need form, and then everyone's talking about over.
Okay.
So anyway,
I will. It's a working session to get to...